You are listening to the Two and Out CFL podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
So the Ottawa Redblacks are undefeated when Trevor Harris only wears one glove.
Oh, so we're getting into analytics.
Take that for a stat. Look at that. He drops the one glove. They smash time Hamilton. And you know what? Might be on to something there.
Grab some poutine and a double-double. It's time for the Two and Out CFL podcast. Every week, John Fraser.
I'm actually part Canadian. No doubt about it. Who wants to draft me? Love me rouge.
And Travis Kura.
Man, if they go with Sunseri over Brett Smith, then nothing has changed in Saskatchewan.
We'll deliver news and fantasy analysis from the Canadian Football League. And nonsense.
What do you call it? You're supposed to do the thing where you talk and you pretend like you're like interested in the thing, but you just need the money. Yeah. The inner blue.
Can't forget the nonsense.
I thought you should know I ate two carrot muffins as you were drunk, Jim Barker.
Ready, set, hut!
Man, if they go for Trent Richardson over Cameron Marshall, then nothing has changed in Saskatchewan. It is episode 77, the 2&Out CFL podcast. It's Frey, or what the hell? It's Kura and Brazilian Ty today. And man, there are fewer things better to see at work than when you walk into the office and there is about half a dozen Girl Guides cookie boxes there.
Okay. But what kind of Girl Guide cookies?
Well, it was the split box, the vanilla and the chocolate.
Oh, none of that chocolate mint garbage then.
It was not the chocolate mint.
I buy a case every year, so I have a dozen boxes that usually last me about a month.
A month? I've probably ate three boxes today.
Trying to watch my figure.
So there is my Grey Cup fit-up update for you.
Mine's going about as well as yours.
Okay, awesome. Good to hear.
In the Huddle with Fraser and Kura on the 2 and Out podcast.
Man, it was a pretty busy week. I guess we should just start with saying John Chick has been traded to the Edmonton Eskimos from Hamilton.
Nothing negative to say about what went down. Was a shock, nonetheless. Had to figure out, you know, shoot, what are we doing with family, all that kind of stuff. But still figuring that out. But, man, as soon as I was told who and where, and a team that wants me is a team that I love to play for, you know.
Well, yeah, I'd like to play for them over Hamilton as well. But, I mean, man, he's got, what, 8 kids to move. That's a big process.
Yeah, I can barely move myself when I get switched jobs, so I can imagine hauling around 8 kids.
Exactly. But contracts become guaranteed after Labor Day, so of course that's one of the reasons Hamilton wanted to move him. He's, what, 34 years old now? And I know some Hamilton fans are mad about this, but man, nothing's happening this year. Might as well shed a little bit of salary here. He's under contract until next year. And from Edmonton's point of view, everybody's a little bit banged up. Why not? Why don't we get all shored up for Labor Day against Calgary and the rest of the year? Hamilton ends up moving up 3 rounds in the draft next year. I kind of see it as a win-win for both teams.
Well, fans in Hamilton, this should be the thing they're least worried about is trading John Chick. There's bigger problems.
Yeah.
In the organization right now, but where Edmonton is right now with all their injuries on the defensive side of the ball, this was a no-brainer. If you can get a veteran guy like this that comes in and he has a nose for rushing the quarterback, and that's what he does, and he's one of the best in the league at it, so it was a no-brainer for Brock Sunderland to make this move.
It was kind of a bizarre news story. I think it was Tuesday this came up. Justin Dunk reporting that Trent Richardson was on his way to Regina with the intent of signing a contract with the Saskatchewan Roughriders. He has not played a game for 3 years. He is still only 26 years old. He played with the Indianapolis Colts. He played with the Cleveland Browns. And his career kind of just faded away down the toilet. I thought it was bizarre. The news now is that he basically didn't want to sign a contract because he wants to make an NFL comeback, and the contract says that he'd basically be playing in Canada for 2 years. My only thought is why? Why Saskatchewan? Why are they even talking to him? They asked Chris Jones on Wednesday when they could expect him in Regina, and he basically said, I really don't care. I'm focused on beating the Edmonton Eskimos this week. So as always, no insight from Mr. Chris Jones.
This guy couldn't make it with the Cleveland Browns. They traded him away. And I don't get why. Like, I understand why you'd have him on an egg list, but why even bother talking to him right now when you have Cameron Marshall? And then you have Keenan LaFrance, who's not a terrible backup in that position. It just makes no sense to me. A guy who seems to be a liability in the NFL. I don't think it's going to change much if he comes up here. I didn't like it when I heard it, but from the sounds of it, he wants to stay down there and pursue NFL opportunities. So, you know, I'm kind of glad he's not coming. I get trying to add depth, but why Trent Richardson?
Yeah, mostly I was confused. I don't know. Would he come up to be a depth guy? I'm not sure he would. I don't think we'd, in the CFL in general, you don't really need a three-yard guy. It just, that's what he was, and that's what he is. I don't know if things have changed over the past 3 years of doing nothing with him, but it didn't really make any sense. We'll see if he even lands in Regina by the end of the year, but the NFL cuts are coming, and some of our Canadian guys are looking okay south of the border, and it's really cool to see that as NFL training camps are, man, they're getting really intense right now. Some injury news. We seem to talk about this every week. You had said that you saw somebody suggest that maybe it's the Thursday games causing the injuries.
Yeah, it was after they announced the Roy Howard and Ryan King injuries and that they were out for the year.
Yeah.
And somebody quoted or retweeted it and mentioned it again on Twitter and said, thank you, TSN, for Thursday Night Football. You're creating way more injuries than we need. Well, Edmonton played Thursday the week before and then this past Thursday. That's a week between games. That's normal. If a team plays on Saturday and then again on Friday, nobody bats an eye that it was only 5 days in between games. So I don't know exactly where that argument comes in from. In the NFL, yeah, okay, Sunday to Thursday, that's a little ridiculous. You can't get any work in. But to say that one shorter day of a week, that's not going to create all these injuries. I think the guy was out to lunch. I can't remember who it was. It was just some random guy. I tweeted him back and, you know, gave him the numbers of, you know, they played a week apart. Your argument's pretty much moot at this point, and I didn't get anything back, so I was just happy to shut him up.
Let's quickly go through Edmonton's schedule. They played on a Saturday in week one, Friday the next week, then bye. Then Friday, then Thursday, then Friday, and not the next day, you smartass, and then the next Friday, Thursday, and now Friday. They have been given a dream of a schedule.
It's not so much an easy schedule, it's just easy scheduling. The teams are playing.
Yeah, I don't mean the teams are easy, but the
schedule. Let's be honest. I guess they only played one Western team in their first six games. And the last couple of years, the West has beaten up on the East. But to say that their schedule has caused all these injuries, I think that's asinine.
Yeah, it's just a bit of a fluke, I think, that Edmonton is going through. The only thing is those Labor Day games when you play on Monday and then Saturday. It used to be the Calgary and Edmonton
Monday
rematch.
Friday.
Yeah, which is tough. There's no room to cool off between those games. If you hate the other team in the fourth quarter of the Labor Day game, you're going to be just as pissed off in the first quarter of the next game. But these teams, as it is, they beat the crap out of each other on Monday and play on Saturday. But it's been like that for, you know, 50 years or whatever. I just think the injuries are just fluky. And believe it or not, the Eskimos are kind of on the mend right now. Back at practice this week, Adarius Bowman, Brandon Zylstra, Arjun Colquhoun, Adam Konar, and Almondo Sewell. That's an all-star team returning to practice.
Yeah, that's scary. The only thing I can think is that Bowman probably isn't going to come back before he's done his six games because of the salary cap issues.
Yeah, he probably won't be back till the Calgary game next week.
Right, because you don't have to pay his full salary if he stays on the sixth game, but having all these guys up and practicing again and getting healthy, that is nothing but good news for the Eskimo Empire guys.
Still no Weston Dressler at practice in Winnipeg, and Mike O'Shea playing a little bit of games with us. There was a thought that Taylor Loeffler was a bit banged up, and while he's listed on the roster, They got to scratch two guys, and there's still rumors that he could be scratched.
He hasn't practiced all week.
Yeah, so they're still saying he might not make the 44. He is on the 46, but he could still get scratched and not play against Montreal. So Mike O'Shea, he's another one of those guys. He doesn't give us any information at all.
Well, and that's a guy you need in your lineup. Last year, even as a rookie, like once he was starting safety, he played the position extremely well, and he's doing it again this year. And that way that defense is, everybody rallies to the football. So if that happens, you got to have a really good safety back there. Another thing that really helps is that he's Canadian.
Yeah,
if you can have another Canadian starting, it's just one more area where you can put that American player maybe on your defensive line to rush quarterback.
Yeah, or offensive line. The Bombers, the team just changed fundamentally last year when Loeffler started on safety and Travis Bond started on offensive line. Everything changed, and all of a sudden they're a good team. We'll talk about them beating Edmonton last week. Maybe it's time we do give the Blue Bombers a bit of respect here. Another injury I do want to mention, Tyrell Sutton hasn't practiced for Montreal this week. Brandon Rutley was working with the first teamers. I don't know if you're picking any Alouettes this week. They've scored 27 points combined over the past 2 weeks, and last week, none from the offense. So, I don't know.
Tread lightly.
Yeah, exactly. A sad one. You and I, both fans of Anthony Coombs, undergoes shoulder surgery. They do hope that he could play again by the end of the season, but Declan Cross had a big role in last week's game. 5 catches, 34 yards, and a touchdown. Maybe he's the guy that gets more targets and gets a little bit of the short passing game from Ricky Ray over the next few weeks. Maybe it was just a situation where he's already on the roster. We'll throw him the ball for this week. But maybe he fills that role for the next few weeks because Ricky Ray likes to have that short passing game. They don't have much of a running game. And Cross, he looked okay last week. I like watching him play. He's a fun guy to watch.
Well, somebody's got to get those touches.
Yep.
And Declan Cross proved that he could do that last week. Sure, only he didn't have the yardage that you would expect from 5 catches, but that's not Ricky Ray's offense that he runs. So if Declan Cross proved he can do it last week, I don't see why he can't do it again this week. Keep giving him the ball. Maybe he does have a breakout game. And, you know, you're playing Calgary, so I mean, it's kind of going to be a crapshoot anyway for your offense. But if he's already there and you're not having to make a bunch of roster moves, it's a really good deal for Toronto.
Let's go through last week's games.
Time for the Fantasy Exposé on the 2 and Out podcast.
Yes, it was the first game of the week. The 7-0 Edmonton Eskimos go to Winnipeg, and they try to overcome all their injuries. It didn't quite happen, but it did come down to an onside kick.
Sean White also on the injured list. See what Hugh O'Neill does in a rare chance to execute it. And this one brought down by Kelvin Adams. Sure hands. That's going to do it. The 10th team in Canadian Football League history to win its first 7 is going to get stopped right there.
33-26 was the final score. I think the Bomber fans really brought it in this game. Man, did they sound good. I think they're the loudest in the CFL. I guess we're going to find out Labor Day and a Banjo Bowl, aren't we?
Yeah, and that's... People have already started on Twitter about this, and it seems like the game doesn't even matter anymore.
Yeah.
It's becoming a pissing contest between Bomber fans and Rider fans, which is awesome, because that's what it inevitably turns into coming into Labor Day every year. But now one of these teams is going to have bragging rights, and it's two separate competitions now. But if Winnipeg wins the game and they prove to be the loudest, then we're going to have to deal with a lot of cocky Manitobans.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's the thing. Rider fans and Bomber fans, I think they're cut from the same cloth. They're just different colored cloths. I'm sorry. People from Regina can't chirp Winnipeg, and people from Winnipeg can't chirp Regina. That's just the way it goes. But Winnipeg, a big win here over the Eskimos. Yes, the Eskimos are very banged up. I will say, over the past little while, I haven't given Matt Nichols or the Bombers enough credit. I still don't know if I, you know, believe that they can win the Western Division or anything like that, but should we be giving them more respect than they're getting?
Oh, that's a really great question. You know, Matt Nichols has done nothing but win since he got to Winnipeg. I know it's somewhat of a swear word in football circles, but he's a game manager.
Yeah, no one likes to be called that.
It's the same as Canadian quarterback. That's a swear word in the CFL, let's be honest.
Yeah, four-letter word.
But he's starting to take care of the ball a lot better now. And, you know, he's got Andrew Harris, which is huge for that team. And with Dressler out, they're going to lean on Andrew Harris a lot more. The only thing that worries me is that they only won by 7 against second-string players, essentially, in Edmonton. So it's hard to say whether or not they are as good as they looked or if that was just a product of the team they were playing.
I still think if you shut down Andrew Harris, that team's in a lot of trouble.
I think so too, but it's so hard to shut down Andrew Harris. And if he gets going, you have to commit to the run because you have to stop him. And then they're just going to hurt you through the air. So, and Matt Nichols is smart enough to do that and to realize that when it's happening. He may not be the flashiest or the best quarterback in the league, but as long as Andrew Harris is going, this team, I said earlier this year that I didn't like them because they are a running team with Andrew Harris in the backfield, but he had more yards through the air than he had on the ground last week, and when you got a dual threat like that, I think the team is good. They're not great. They're not the best in the West by any means. They are a good football team, but they're not gonna surprise anybody come playoff time.
105 yards for Harris on the ground, 120 through the air. He did the 100 in both, and that's impressive. We don't see that very often at all. So I do think injuries caught up with Edmonton here. At the same time, a lot of depth, and they kept winning. They did go 7-0. That's what, the only 10th team in CFL history to do that. So it is impressive either way. They are home against Saskatchewan this week, which is going to be a fun one. Every week we seem to wonder if things are going to change in Hamilton, and this week they just got worse. Ottawa beat Hamilton 37-18, and this play not only sums up the game but sums up their season.
Everything on this play worked to perfection. Banks ends up in isolation. He's the lone receiver out there as they go tight. He sells it with that little throttle down as if he's not going anywhere. Blows by Jarrell Gavins, adjusted well to the football.
Just botched it.
Just couldn't bring it in.
That kind of summarizes the season for Banks so far this year.
If you didn't see the play, it was in the third quarter, 18-10 for Ottawa, second and one. Jeremiah Mazzoli comes in. They decide to go deep. Banks wide open. You can't get any more wide open than that. Drops the ball. Next thing you know, Ottawa drives down the field, gets another touchdown. Next thing you know, Zach Caleros fumbles the ball. Another touchdown for Ottawa. And it's just, Kent Austin looks defeated on the sideline. He's like, well, there's another way we can blow it.
Yeah, well, I thought those two plays defined their season quite perfectly with the drop pass by Banks and then the strip, the strip return for the touchdown. Yeah, Ken Austin, I think he's lost the room. I don't think there's a lot of faith left in that coaching staff as a whole. These guys they come out flat every week, it seems, and the fact that they put Masoli in, I think that says more about Caleros maybe not. I don't know if he's not ready to go or if he just doesn't care anymore. He knows their season's pretty much done. Just can't motivate the guy. I don't know. But nothing can go right for Hamilton right now, and it's been like this the entire year. So if they go 0-18, I'm not going to be surprised.
So the Ottawa Redblacks are undefeated when Trevor Harris only wears one glove.
Oh, so we're getting into analytics.
Take that for a stat. Look at that. He drops the one glove. They smash Heim Hamilton. And you know what? Might be onto something there.
I never understood how he could throw the ball with the glove on.
I've always seen never trust a quarterback that wears two gloves.
Doug Flutie did it, though.
Well.
But that was when he was in Toronto and they beat Saskatchewan, so we wouldn't want to talk about it.
Old Flutie was not good in the cold. When he played, in Stamps fans were not happy with him because
no.
November would roll around and, oh, well, there's Flutie. Crap in the bed.
Oh, great. Another pick because he can't grip the ball. So he goes to two gloves. Like, how do you have any feel? I've never understood it. I've played catch and, you know, flag football and everything and tried throwing with a glove, and it's like, no, I'm not doing this. I don't care how cold it is. I'll freeze my hand. I'd rather be able to actually feel the football. But then maybe he goes one glove the rest of the year.
Well, he goes 36 of 48 for 394 yards and two touchdowns. I think he should drop that glove.
Well, you heard it here first.
That's a Two and Out exclusive, man. They should be doing the Thriller dance, the one glove, I mean, to open up the next game in Ottawa. That's what they should be doing.
No.
I don't know what else to say about this game. Just poor Hamilton. Do you think they'd go with Jeremiah Mazzoli?
I would. Kolaros has proven that he can't win a football game this year. Like, it's time to move on.
This
Maybe
year,
not move on from Kolaros, like, and trade him. But this year, it's time to see what, like, the season's over for them, basically. They're gonna have to win out to have any shot. Give the ball to Mazzoli, give him the reins, and see if things change. And if things change and they start playing better, well, then maybe Kolaros is expendable in the offseason. But he's got a pretty big ticket, so you better hope that there's a team out there that's going to need him, if that is the route you want to go.
I am wondering if they're going to move any more of these high-priced veterans just to see what they can get. They already did it with Chick. I mean, hey, does anybody want Brandon Banks or CJ Gable or Simone Lawrence? You know, these guys.
I'll take Banks in Saskatchewan. Somebody to return a kick.
Yeah. I think they're all great players that can get it done, but they're just not getting it done in Hamilton. And maybe they do blow everything up. I don't know. It could happen. I'd take Zach Kolaros in Saskatchewan.
There's a lot to be said for a change of scenery for a lot of players, too, right?
Yeah.
So, it's almost like they've already blown it up because they're so bad. So, you might as well, I would sell the farm now and start building and getting more Canadian talent. And, you know, eventually you can sign free agents. Everybody can do that. So, I mean, at some point something's got to give here and they've got to figure out what they're going to do. Because they can't do this again next year.
No.
And if they keep all these veteran guys, well, what's going to change? Except for Kent Austin, but Kent Austin has to tell Tillman to fire Kent Austin.
Kent Austin, the only way he goes is if he steps down, I think.
Well, yeah, that's the only way he goes, and he's not going to, because why would you give up that money?
Yeah. So, although he does seem a bit stressed out.
it's a dumpster fire in Hamilton. I know I've said that a lot this year, but it's true, and there's no other word to describe it.
Calgary beats BC 21-17, the second half of the doubleheader. This one was an absolute grinder. It came down to a measurement.
Well, they got a chain link or two. That still might not be enough. Dave Dickinson's in an uproar.
Well, yeah, because they moved it an inch. And Dave Dickinson's argument is, how could you possibly change it to move it an inch? And
they're short.
They didn't get it.
Matter.
Didn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It's a turnover on downs.
This game was just an ugly Western showdown. I mean, BC was in it the whole way. They could have won it, but man, was it a ugly game.
It was just grind them out, smash them with football. It was the old Norris division in the NHL. You could win the division with 50 points, and as long as you beat the hell out of everybody else, you're going to the conference final. And it's the same. That's what this game reminded me of. It wasn't pretty by any means. You know, the guys just got the job done, maybe? I don't know. This game was weird, especially for a Calgary-BC game. It was weird.
Well, Calgary had 15 penalties for 150 yards. That is very... it's not very characteristic of them. And, yeah, they're coming off the bye. They've won something like 14 games in a row off the bye since 2005. Mm-hmm. So you had to pick them. But there was an interesting point during the game. They showed Bo Levi Mitchell on the sideline, wincing, kind of rubbing his shoulder. Like, there's a little bit of an issue going on there. Another situation where we get no information during the week. Bo says it's fine. Dickinson says it's fine. I don't know if it's fine. We'll see if this becomes sort of a target for Bo Levi over the next few weeks.
Well, everybody can say that it's fine, but everybody saw him rubbing it and wincing. So, of course, defensive guys are going to look at that and be like, okay, we have a target. You don't want to see guys get hurt. You don't want to target guys up high like that. But if his arm's up after a throw, well, maybe you do take a shot if you have the chance. Because right now, who's his backup?
Well, Buckley. Andrew Buckley.
That's right. Yeah, Canadian quarterback. So
swear word.
I mean, yeah, he doesn't scare anybody because they only really use him in short yardage. So nobody really knows what he is. So, I mean, if Bo Levi is hurt or a little banged up and he does get hurt in that game, it gives your team a way better chance to win than if he isn't playing the entire night.
Jonathan Jennings had 6 carries for 39 yards and a rushing touchdown. I think that's what Jennings was when he first came into the league. He was exciting to watch. You couldn't, you know, get to him at all. And the way the offensive line is this year, maybe we see Jonathan Jennings start to run a little bit more. I'd like to see more of that.
Does he run more because he has to?
Or because he's gun shy? I'd hope it's little of both.
Yeah. Like, when he first came in, he was that prototypical what you wanted in a CFL quarterback. He could throw the ball, and he had a really good arm, and he was mobile. And he's still mobile, but he seems that it's almost like they tried to change what he was, and that, since he got hurt, maybe he's a little gun shy and he doesn't want to step in and take those hits, so he's starting to become more mobile again. But yeah, he's an exciting quarterback to watch, and that's exactly what we need in this league, is, you know, guys that are going to run the football. And, you know, Ricky Ray, pocket passer, there's something to be said that, you know, watching him tear apart a defense, can be entertaining. But, I mean, having that aspect of you never know when this guy could break a big run makes it super exciting. So yeah, like you said, I'd like to see more of that too from Jonathan Jennings.
I think some quarterbacks, it's a part of their maturation process where they think, hey, man, I need to become a better pocket passer. That's what quarterbacks do. Maybe stop improvising a little bit, get a little bit better making your reads. I'd like the perfect world of both. I mean, Bo Levi in this game got his first rushing yards of the season.
Yeah.
Let that sink in. He's had none up until this week. Hey, maybe the shoulder is bugging him a little bit. There were some moments in the game yesterday where I'm like, Bo could have took off, but he's just not doing that. And I mean, I guess it works for him. They keep winning. I can't criticize that.
But if you're Dave Dickinson and you see, and you have Bo Levi Mitchell and you see that he's going to run and then he doesn't that kind of make you feel like, whew, okay, there's one less chance that he's going to get hurt.
Yeah.
Like, he's so good in the pocket, so good at reading defenses that he doesn't have to be that mobile. He can get the ball out super quick. Jennings is still relatively young, and still, I still think he's learning a lot, or trying to learn more about the game. And maybe him being mobile helps that, because if he doesn't see options right away, he can take off.
He's only 25.
Yeah, instead of making a bad decision and throwing into double coverage like a lot of young quarterbacks do, you know, if he takes off, you know, he can get back to the line, get back to the huddle, regroup, run another play, try it again.
Like, when I was 25, I could hardly read Goosebumps, never mind defenses.
When I was 25, I could barely get to work on time. Not much has changed in 4 years.
Have you read much R.L. Stine in your day? You know those Goosebumps choose-your-own-way books?
not since I was like 13.
Those choose your own way books, I couldn't beat them now. Never mind when I was 13. Man, those
I always
tough.
Used to get freaked out just looking at the covers.
You're out.
Yeah, I read a couple and I was like, no, I can't do this anymore. And then I got a TV in my room and the reading kind of went downhill from there.
Yeah, Netflix kind of does that to me. Roy Finch, I do want to mention, I think he might be the best returner in the game.
Yeah, that you're not going to hear an argument from me. This guy's ridiculous.
He had 3 kickoff returns for 85 yards in this one, 6 punt returns for 50. He didn't get a touchdown in it, but he has had touchdowns this year. At this point, he might be the most consistent guy in the league. Chris Rainey does, I think, give him a little bit of a competition there, but Finch is just, he needs more respect, I think, from everybody. And there's another guy. He's only 25 years old.
Yeah, special teams is not a sexy aspect of football.
No, it's not. Nope.
But you have to be able to flip the field, and that's exactly what Roy Finch does for the Stampeders. And when you can set that offense up with a shorter field, they're going to put points up, and that's what they do. And if you have a good returner, especially in the CFL, with such a long field or a longer field, if you can flip that field, if you can win the field position battle, 9 times out of 10, you're going to win that football game. And Roy Finch flips the field for Calgary so often and so much that it just makes him such a better football team than if he's not in the lineup or when they have somebody else returning. That, yeah, he is the best returner in the game. Chris Rainey's pretty good. No disrespect to Martise Jackson in Toronto. He can do it too, but Roy Finch just seems every week he does something special. Maybe not get a touchdown, but something special on a return that, you know, gets an extra 20 yards, and that's the difference between a field goal and a touchdown for that team.
I was texting you, too. That head fake of his, it might be the best in the league. His body is moving in direction before his head.
I think he fakes out the cameraman.
It's fun to watch. He's one of the funnest guys to watch, I think, in this league. And I think that's what we need to because the CFL, the special teams still retains its importance. South of the border, I don't think it's as important anymore when every kickoff is a touchback now.
And they have the fair catch.
Yeah, to me, I just go to sleep when that happens. But the returners we have here, Finch included, so much fun to watch. Now let's talk about the last game of the week. At least some records were broken in this one.
He's already thrown 2 touchdown passes this afternoon. Little wing formation, cluster formation. Declan Cross is going to score! Touchdown, Argos!
Declan Cross isn't the guy who gets to keep that football. This one goes to Ricky Ray, number 99. Of his Toronto Argonaut career.
Argos beat the Owls. And they don't just beat the Owls. They beat the Owls 38-6. Ricky Ray becomes the leading touchdown passer in Argo history. It's funny because a lot of people, when you think of Ricky Ray, you think of him as an Edmonton Eskimo. And I'm not going to blame you for that. But he's the leading touchdown passer for a team that was founded in 1873. That's a lot of quarterbacks that have been. Of course, back then they didn't have quarterbacks in 1873, but it's an old franchise with a lot of history, and Ricky Ray's thrown the most touchdown passes in that franchise's history.
And they had a lot. It was a revolving door for a long time in Toronto where guys wouldn't stay.
Yeah, it's
so
true.
It was hard to rack up numbers, right? But that being said, yeah, there's been a lot of quarterbacks. When you look at the quarterbacks that they have had, like Steven Giles. Cleo Lemon, yeah. You know, when you got quarterbacks like that, not hard to move up. But like, yeah. 99 touchdowns, and you know, he's been there for 5 or 6 years and missed an entire year with an injury when Travis Harris got his job. Or Trevor Harris got his job, sorry. This is a pretty big deal.
Kerry Joseph had a great Argos career.
Oh, my God.
Oh, a hero in Saskatchewan and a zero in Toronto. That's the only way.
Yeah.
We'll put that. Nick Lewis inches closer to passing G. Roy Simon for the most receptions of all time. He passed Ben Cahoon in this one. And after the game, we kind of thought, oh, he's 9 away from tying G. Roy. He's actually 8 away from tying Superman. I don't know if you've seen this, but yeah. Steve Daniel, the leading statistician in the Canadian Football League, has been going through all of Nick's games to see if anything has been missed as we get close to this record. And I guess in a game in 04, he made a catch that he was not credited for. So they added it to the stats, and now he's that much closer to tying G. Roy for most receptions all time. I don't know if he gets it this week. I do think he'll get it next week against Ottawa.
How do you get that job? To watch football at your desk for 8 hours a day just to see if a guy caught a football.
I feel like my eyes would go crossed. Do you think you could do that? I think it'd be tough.
Like, could I have the football game on the TV or on one screen and then like Netflix on the other and kind of go back and forth?
No, I think you got to pay full attention, man.
Oh, boy. I don't know if I could do that.
Isn't that what you do now?
I watch a lot of football while I pay PS4, and then I can just look over every play and watch the replay. So, but just to sit down and actually, like, for 9 hours, 8 hours a day and go through old games, and you know exactly what the score was, you know every play.
It's like, impressive.
Yeah, like Derek Taylor, when he does all of his stats, he's got to watch every game.
Probably 4 times at least every game.
Yeah, like I try to watch as much as I can, but like there are nights where it's like 10 o'clock. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to miss the end of this game. I'm going to bed. But that's their job. Like, I couldn't imagine just sitting in front of a screen and watching nothing but football for 8 hours a day.
Yeah, I'd love to get paid to do it.
Oh, if I got paid to do it, I'd have no problem doing it. but I mean, right now, I probably wouldn't be able to do it.
Well, how different is this Argo team when Ricky is on the field? Like, they took a complete 180 from a week before, and it was 35-0 at halftime. I'm kind of surprised that Ray, he stayed in till the very end.
Yeah, that I didn't agree with. He's already been hurt once this year. It's garbage time. You know, I would have pulled him. In my opinion, personal milestones don't matter as much as getting your team a win.
For sure.
Yeah, they were already going to win the game, but you got to look at that point at 35-0. You got to make sure Ray's healthy for next week.
Oh yeah.
So I would have pulled him, but this offense and the scheme is built for Ricky Ray to run. So when he's on the field, everything just clicks. Fajardo and Matthews, not so much. They're completely different quarterbacks than Ricky Ray. So. When he's in the lineup, this team can be scary good.
I think right now, Ricky would be the East Division's nominee for MOP, and Mike Riley would be the West Division's nominee for MOP. But if there was an award for most valuable player to his team, that has to be Ricky Ray right now. I feel like if Riley went down, I do think there is a hit when you go to James Franklin. He's a great quarterback, but it's not the hit anywhere close than what the Argos take if Ricky Ray's not playing.
No, the drop-off from Ricky Ray to Fajardo compared to the drop-off from Mike Riley to James Franklin, you can't even compare it. The difference between them is astronomical. It's... James Franklin started for those Eskimos 2 years ago.
Yeah, the Grey Cup year.
And played unreal. Kept his team in the playoff hunt. And, you know, Mike Riley came back, and yeah, Mike Riley got his job back. But if it wasn't for James Franklin, they could have been in a lot worse shape than they were. Ricky Ray goes down, this team's done. So, yeah, Ricky Ray is not only most outstanding, now we're calling him the best player in the league. I would give that to SJ Green because he's the playmaker over Ricky Ray. But MVP wise, I go Ricky Ray.
We're in week 10. I would say 12 weeks ago, everyone was saying Ray and Green are done. Ray and Green are now the dynamic duo in the Canadian Football League. He already has, what, 850 yards? If Green gets 150 yards this week, he'll be the 17th player in CFL history to have 1,000 receiving yards through the first 10 weeks. I don't think he's going to get 150. They're up against Calgary this week.
Yeah.
So that makes it pretty rough. But the fact that he's already in the next 2 weeks, I would put money on that. He is going to have himself 1,000 yards already, and we're basically halfway through the season.
Hey, CFL defenses, let me give you a secret. You need to double SJ Green.
I don't know if you can cover him.
You got to do something.
We got to try. I mean,
yeah, you gotta try. But I mean, you see him in single coverage. It's like, why? You're not giving your guy a chance at all. At least with two guys there, at least maybe think about not throwing it there. But he's so big and so physical that he can just go up and get the ball anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know if doubling even helps. But you can't triple a guy. And you can't, after 5 yards, you're kind of screwed as a DB. So yeah, if Ricky Ray just keeps throwing him the ball, I mean, it's not going to be an issue for him to get 1,500 yards this year.
There were 16,000 people in attendance for this one. Of course, if you got a ticket for the Argos game, you got a ticket for the CNE as well. So things trending upwards, I think, for the Argos. And if this team continues to win, I do think the people will come out to BMO because it's a great place to watch a game. I've only ever seen the Grey Cup there, so I guess I can't speak towards a regular season game. But, man, it's a cool place to watch a game. And I think things are looking up in Toronto. But as for the Alouettes, it's funny how the quarterback tandem of Darian Durant and Drew Willey got it done in Saskatchewan in 2013. They're not going to get it done in Montreal this year. Darian Durant had 93 passing yards.
Yeah. And you know who's going to look at that and be like, well, it's a good thing we traded him.
I know. It's so stupid. Because if it was the exact opposite, where Kevin Glenn has 93 yards and Durant throws for 400. I told you so, you know?
Yeah,
but You look at the game, and in this one, Toronto had 39 minutes. They had the ball for 39 minutes. Montreal had it for 20.
Yeah, you're not going to win that football game. Sorry.
They couldn't get anything done. And, I mean, props to Corey Chamberlain as well. He's put himself together an awesome defense in Toronto. And honestly, going into this game, I thought Ricky would still be banged up. They'd have a little bit of trouble getting things going. I'm okay with being wrong, though, because Ricky Ray is sure impressing us every single week.
He's found the fountain of youth. This is phenomenal what he's doing. Those first 3 weeks, it was like, what are we watching? And then it was like, oh, okay, there's your norm. There it is. There's the downturn. And then he got hurt. And it's like, okay, well, I guess that's it for Ricky Ray. You know, he's going to come back, and it's just going to be, you know, those 200-yard games. It's Toronto to be anemic. And he comes back and just blows the doors off Montreal. And it's like, holy, like, I don't, this is awesome. Like, Ricky Ray is it's an institution in the CFL. Really,
yes.
It is.
Yes.
You know, ever since he was rookie Ricky Ray in Edmonton, you know, you follow the guy's career, and he's so good at his job. And it doesn't matter, he can make any receiver look good, but him having SJ Green, it's going to inflate his numbers a bit, but not enough where you're going to say it's all SJ Green. He's still a really good quarterback if he stays healthy.
Well, let's pick the games for this week.
It's everyone's favorite game show. Are you smarter than two overweight Canadian podcasters? Pick the weekly winners in the CFL on Facebook or Twitter at 2&Out CFL.
And game one, it is the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the Montreal Alouettes. Thursday Night Football, where are you going?
Winnipeg.
Yeah.
They score almost 40 points a game on the road. And, you know, Montreal only scores about 20 at home. So, I mean, the numbers are stacked up against it. Winnipeg coming off that big win at home against Edmonton last week. You know, I think they're going to carry that momentum into Montreal and get a W on Thursday night.
Yes or no, will Nick Lewis get the record in this game?
He needs 8.
To tie, yep.
No.
No. Yeah, I think he gets it Labor Day weekend against Ottawa. I'm going Winnipeg, too, here.
I think he'll have 8 targets.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. Yeah, I'm going Bombers. His Jet Set Satellite. Friday night football. It's going to be a fun one. The Eskies home to the Riders. The Riders coming off the bye. What's your pick here?
Oh, Edmonton. I'm not even worried.
Yeah, I'm going Edmonton here. I'm not picking them to smash the Riders or anything like that. I actually think it's going to be a close competitive game. Although the Riders on the road this season have just been coming off absolutely flat. They can't afford that against the Eskimos in another divisional game here. But over the past, 27 years or whatever, whoever's on this Rider team walks into Commonwealth Stadium and doesn't do well. I'll never forget a game I was at a few years back. The Riders are up 20-0 at halftime, and I'm thinking, yeah, this is awesome. And they lost 21-20. I mean,
Saskatchewan this year is 0-3 on the road and getting outscored by 11 on average.
Wow.
They're averaging 13.7 points a game on the road. So until that changes, there's no way I'm picking against Edmonton on Friday night.
Yeah, their history in Commonwealth isn't all that bright, so I'm going Edmonton as well. Fight on Eskimos, we're marching right on Eskimos. We're charging down the field for all to see and shouting all to victory. It's on till every game is won. The green and gold is bold, and when we're done, we'll tell the world we're proud of Edmonton and the Edmonton Eskimos. And I tell you what, man, I've been going to Rider games at Commonwealth since probably 1999. I think I've seen 2, maybe 3 wins in the Flash.
I've never seen a win for Saskatchewan.
At Commonwealth.
I don't think I have. I'd have to go back and check, but it would have been the night that I painted my face like Paul Stanley.
Okay, yeah.
But I was looking in the mirror, so the star went on the wrong side. And nobody said anything.
That's awesome. We move on to a game where I know a lot of people think the Riders and Eskimo game is the game of the week. I actually think this one is. BC in Ottawa to take on the Red Blacks. It's a very interesting game here because the Lions, they're struggling the last few weeks. A team that everybody thought would compete for first in the East, and I know it's week 10 or whatever, so they've got some time here. But Ottawa, they really need to turn things on as well, and they are at home. Who's your pick?
I'm taking Ottawa. BC, although against Saskatchewan in Regina, they only got 8 points. They're still averaging 25-ish on the road. Ottawa's averaging just a little bit more, but at home, 3 points to the home side. I think it's going to be a 1-point game. I think Ottawa wins on maybe a last-second field goal, or they're up by 8, and BC scores a touchdown late, and they got to go for the onside kick. But I'm taking the Red Blacks to win a close one.
The long trip, too, all the way to Ottawa. It's a 1:30 Mountain Time game on Saturday. I got a hunch here. I'm putting the 10% confidence on pick'em.cfl.ca, where you can actually join us on there picking the games. I just got Ottawa 10% confidence. Not that much, but that's where I'm going. What it all comes down to is that everything's gonna be quite all right. 'Cause I've got one hand in my pocket and And the last game of the week, it is the Calgary Stampeders home to take on the Toronto Argonauts. 7 o'clock kickoff. Who are you going with?
Calgary. Did you really need to ask?
I probably didn't.
They average 43 points a game at home.
Jeez. This year.
They're going to win by 20 points.
20?
We were just talking, Ricky Ray and SJ Green, Calgary's that much better as a team than just those two. They're going to put up a big number on Saturday night.
Okay. Sweet City Woman.
Sweet City Woman. On the banjo and me, we got a feel for singing. Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, if you want tickets for any of these games, seatgiant.ca. It's all in Canadian dollars, which is really cool. And if you put the promo code POUTINE in, you support Two and Out, you get a couple percent off your tickets, and you're taken care of. A shout-out to Steve. Last week wanted to buy some tickets for the Bombers and Alouettes game. He put in poutine. It worked all good for him. Saved some money, supported Two and Out in the process. So if you want to go to any of the CFL games, they're all on there. NHL's on there. I'm looking. Guns N' Roses is on there. You're taken care of if you go to seatgiant.ca. Promo code poutine. Brazilian tie. You did this show shirtless, I understand.
It's a little warm upstairs.
So
I'm not quite in my summer body anymore.
You're already putting on the winter weight.
Well, you could call it winter weight, or you could just call it my actual weight.
What kind of winter weight?
It hasn't been good for a couple of years since I started living in camps.
How is the food there? They take care of you?
Camp?
Yeah.
In camp, it's okay, but the problem is you ask for a little bit of something, and it's just heaping globs of food on your plate. And it's like, well, I've always been taught you eat everything you take, so I'm going to feel like crap later. You eat it all, and you go back to your camp room and watch the hockey game, so you just sit there and do nothing for 3 hours, go to sleep, go to work, and then you're driving all day at work, and you're eating more camp food for lunch, and you take more than what you think you need just in case you get hungry or you get stranded on a quad or something. Well, you're on your way back to camp. Oh, I got another sandwich. And yeah, you just pack on the pounds if you don't go to the gym.
That sounds like the life.
Needless to say, I don't even know where the gym was in my camp that I was in 2 winters ago.
That's our Grey Cup Fit Up update. 100 days in a row without working out.
Well, what about 12-ounce arm curls?
12-ounce arm curls with the beers?
Yeah, just on one arm, though.
That's a little less than a pound. If you do it all night long, I think you'd be feeling all right.
Well, you got to take into account the weight of the glass.
Okay, yeah, so you might be at a pound.
Yeah, I'm going to test that theory out on Saturday night, I think.
Awesome. Thanks, Brazilian Ty.
Anytime, buddy.
That's episode 77, the Two and Out CFL podcast. Follow and like on Facebook and Twitter at Two and Out CFL. Rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. If you got some time, make sure you do that. It helps other people find the show as well. Have yourself a good one, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.